Batch of Batch. Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
And hello, welcome. It's Sean, it's John, and we have reached the promised land. We're almost done with Game of Thrones. Pretty done in-depth reviews of Season 6 while Season 6 was airing. Do you think Season 6 is still up there for you as quite possibly the best, if not the best?
Entertainment value, it's probably the best season.
Okay.
Writing value, probably Season 1 is still probably the best one.
I think a lot of it has to do with there being a lot of resolution to a lot of different storylines. And some storylines, which we didn't like so much, in particular, the Sparrows.
Was the Arya stuff, House of Black and White, and you know, her training and all that with the Waif.
Yeah, that didn't work out so good.
The fact that you know you have a character, Arya, and she's well aware that during the scene, she's out there in clear sight asking for passage to Westeros, and she just allows this old lady, like,
I remember the whole time thinking that she had some sort of plan up her sleeve, and
right.
She survives King's Landing. She's not stupid, but
I thought that then she was gonna have me, and all of a sudden she's just gonna do it quick, like, you know, kill or something on her, like, you know. But it just didn't happen. It'd be kind of like in Goodfellas when Harry Hill knows he gets out of jail. It's just like him going out in the middle of the street, you know.
Yeah.
Paulie, his restaurant. Near Jimmy Conway's house and being all like, no, woohoo, I'm right here, you know?
Yeah.
That would be like the comparison I would have.
Anyway, Season 6. We open Season 6 with The Red Woman, directed by Jeremy Padeswa, written by Benioff and Weiss. And we start with Jon Snow's corpse, which is found by Ser Davos, Dollar's Ed, and a few other Jon Snow loyalists. Davos and the others take him inside. They lock themselves behind a door while Ed goes to get help. Alistair Thorne assumes command of the Watch. Meanwhile, at Winterfell, Ramsay mourns for Miranda, who Sansa and Theon had killed during their escape. We were left with a cliffhanger. We weren't sure if Sansa and Theon were still alive. Well, I mean, we figured they were, but kind of left it ambiguous if they were alive or not. They just leapt from the castle. But they live, and now they're escaping through the woods. Ramsay's men catch up with them, and they're about to take them again, but Brienne of Tarth and Podrick arrive and save them. Sansa accepts Brienne into her service, much the same way Catelyn Tully Stark did in Season 2. At King's Landing, Cersei receives Jaime, who arrives with Myrcella's dead body. And Jaime promises Cersei they will take their revenge. Lady Obara and Lady Nymeria of Dorne murder Trystane on his way home from King's Landing. While in Sunspear, Doran and Aryo Ahota are killed by Ilaria and Tyene. In Meereen, Tyrion and Varys find all the ships burning in the harbor. It's like, whoop, who did that? Jorah and Dario continue to track Daenerys, who is taken by the Dothraki to Khal Morro. In Braavos, Arya lives on the streets as a beggar, where she's beaten by the Waif. In her chamber, Melisandre removes her bejeweled necklace to reveal her true appearance as an old crone. I didn't like this episode all that much on first viewing, and I guess I liked it a little more on repeat viewing.
High points and low points. I think the low points clearly were the Arya stuff. To a degree, burning ships. I think the same thing we said with Arya, Tyrion and Varys are just walking the street with no armed guard.
You're telling us that the city's under siege and plagued with terrorists and assassins, but you're the hand to the queen. You're just walking the streets with Varys, who's no warrior at all. Just wasn't well thought out.
Another bad moment in this episode was the whole entire Dorne area hotel with one blade.
Right.
So I'm trying to hope that someone found out that at least that blade was leaking poison or something, because just really weak. They really know how to, like, weakly kill off big-time warriors like Arya Ahota.
I will say, in their defense of Arya Ahota, they didn't make him out to be the warrior that he is in A Song of Ice and Fire. Speaking to this betrayal, if this is something that would have happened had we ever gotten The Winds of Winter, I'm not sure how to phrase this, but where Arya Ahota is in those books is he and one of the Sand Snakes are going after Darkstar. So I was thinking, if this is something that legit happens, where Ilaria Sand is going to kill Doran Martell, I guess this is a trap that Arya Ahota is walking into, trying to find Darkstar, Geralt Dane.
It is possible.
I found that real interesting, that storyline. I was excited about Ario Hota. I like Ario Hota a lot. There's a lot of cool stuff that happens in Dorne in A Song of Ice and Fire, and I understand that they have to do the abridged version. So maybe it's better to just jettison on...
Basically, just kill everyone.
Yeah.
Get rid of Dorne, get rid of Hota.
So what's the high point of The Red Woman for you? Is it the twist at the end?
I really love Davos in this season in particular.
Yeah.
You know, that opening, Ghost Howling, Sansa with Brienne, that was actually one of my favorite scenes. You know, if I have a favorite Sansa scene, it's probably that scene.
What are your thoughts on Brienne of Tarth?
Can't stand her.
Really?
She just annoys me. She annoys me in Star Wars. I don't know. Maybe it's Relly Christie. I don't know. She just annoys me somehow.
Are you annoyed by Brienne of Tarth, A Song of Ice and Fire version also?
Yes, a little bit. Her chapters in Feast of Crows are just very...
tedious.
Yeah. They're tough. They are tough chapters to read sometimes.
I'm going to go with a 7 for The Red Woman.
I'm going to go with a 7.5.
All right.
Kind of a high marks. And again, some average marks in there, but another 7.5.
What gives it that extra half point for you?
I just love all the John stuff.
Yeah.
I mentioned it before, and I'll say it again. In the books, it is going to be different. It's going to be the same outcome, but different. There's going to be a much bigger battle with the Wildlings and the Night's Watch.
Yeah.
Than what we say. That was just, we surrendered. It's going to be a lot, much bigger battle. With the Wildlings, there's just too many of them.
Yeah, plus, I mean, the Night's Watch has to be in disarray, having the Lord Commander killed. Plus, the giant, they're already inside the wall. Like, the giant's already there.
It's going to be a much bigger battle. It will be a huge battle, like Blackwater, but it's going to be more than what you saw in the TV show. The TV show just wrapped it up real quick. You know, they've actually had more bigger battles with money spent later on in the episodes.
Yeah.
Make this big publication of doing this other battle.
Episode 2, Home, again directed by Jeremy Padeswa, written by Dave Hill. I think he wrote one last season too, Dave Hill.
No, I have no idea. You know the directors more than I do.
Yeah, I remember reading his name for season 5 also. Bran visits Winterfell in a vision of the past, and he sees Eddard, Benjen, and their sister Lyanna, as well as a young Hodor. Dollar's Ed arrives with Tormund and a group of wildlings, imprisoning Alistair Thorne and the other mutineers. Tommen asks Cersei to teach him to be strong. Tyrion learns that Astapor and Yunkai have reverted back to slavery, and he releases Rhaegal and Viserion from their chains. In Braavos, Arya is attacked by the Waif before Yakin Hagar appears and recruits her again. Walda, Roose's wife, gives birth to a boy, prompting Ramsay to murder Roose, Walda, and the baby. Brienne reveals to Sansa that Arya is still alive. Sansa permits Theon to return to the Iron Islands, where his uncle Euron reappears and murders King Baelin. Davos Seaworth persuades Melisandre to attempt to resurrect Jon. At first, her attempts seem to fail. However, once everyone leaves the room, he awakens. What did you think about Jon's resurrection, first off?
My big thing was when I was first watching it, I thought they were going to see it as a cliffhanger for the next week.
Okay.
I was getting kind of pissed off. Are they going to, like, melt this role? They got episode 3 or 4. Not a surprise. Definitely expecting it. I mean, I think in the book we mentioned her and Patrick, it's going to be somewhat different, but I think the same, you know. Again, I'll say it. I think Shireen's sacrifice will be the life given that's going to resurrect John. They're not going to do it. They didn't do that in the show because they could not show a 10-year-old girl sacrifice to resurrect. They don't want to do that to John's character. Well, John came back. Yeah, well, they, you know.
It's kind of like the Jaime Lannister sends his regards thing. You're trying to push Jaime as a face, so to speak. You can't have Roose Bolton saying Jaime Lannister sends his regards as he kills Robb Stark. So instead you say the Lannisters send their regards.
Right. You know, he believed in all this stuff. He believed in all this. And we're going to sacrifice her, my daughter. I'm going to defeat the White Walkers and Ice King now. And it's not going to happen. He said he's going to get killed.
I'm not okay with Stannis burning his daughter in any way whatsoever. But if it's a different reason, not to just beat Ramsay Bolton, Roose Bolton. I guess I'm better with it, you know.
20 Teflon. The guy in Utah, Tony Teflon, is persistent that Stannis didn't win the battle. Well, in the show, they just gave it to Jon.
Yeah, I'm kind of of that mind also, just because logistically.
I do have one big question. I asked Tony this, and Tony does also agree that Jon will be named King of the North.
Okay.
With that being said, with him being King of the North, he must do something, Jon. Do we think that maybe John does something to help out Stannis at the end. Anthony's resurrected. Does John come down south to the war with the Wildling, help Stannis? Stannis names John the Warden of the North or King of the North, or John Conception or something.
That's interesting.
Where does John come into play into this, that will be, that he will be called King of the North? Where is John? That's my question.
And where does the Vale come into play then?
Right. Maybe they don't come into play. Maybe they don't come into play and they just use the Vale. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm just really curious if John has to have something to do after he gets resurrected with this battle, whether it be helps out in the battle or comes in the aftermath and, you know, is all of a sudden Stark and Winterfell or something like that. You know, where does he come to play?
Yeah.
That would be my question. I would like to ask that question. That's why he's that one who's, you know, all about the status. When's that bad? What does he think? Or what does other people think? Where does John come in to fold this? Or is just John just out there until the Night's King attacks out and the war's already started, the War for the Dawn?
George R. R. Martin has a lot of logistical problems, and maybe that's why he's not writing this fucking book.
Which brings me to another question. And I was thinking about this. If this is all true with Stannis and John's resurrection again, you know, I pretty much convinced myself that John's resurrection is going to come, like, it's not going to come right away in the winter.
It can't. It's too much other stuff that has to happen.
Right, exactly. Is it going to come in the final act? Or does he not even have John in there until, like, the very last, like, cliffhanger when he comes back? Will George do it again where he just leaves out a major character for a book? Will he do it again?
Listen, as much as I love A Feast for Crows and A Dance of Dragons, it's two books where basically nothing happens. Things set out to happen, but as of the end of The Dance of Dragons, nothing's happened. Tyrion hasn't gotten to Daenerys. Nothing's happened.
Do you think he does it again? Can you imagine he does it again when he leaves off this major character? And especially now since pretty much everyone knows he's coming back.
Yeah.
Everyone knows now he's coming back. But anyways, I want to talk a little bit about a couple other things real quick.
Go right ahead. The floor is yours, my friend.
This is where I think we both agree with Tyrion was starting to get a little bit on our nerves a little bit.
Right.
Arya, again, was kind of a low point. The high point was the flashback. I love the flashback. And
yeah.
Particularly, it was great because I was actually disappointed when I read the leaks and the spoilers, not a shock before the season, that they were going to have Eddard and Benjen fight in the courtyard of Winterfell. And we know, the book readers know that it's actually Lyanna and Benjen that fight. So I thought that was kind of like a bullshit way of them not showing Lyanna.
Right.
But then, like, you watch Flash, and all of a sudden you see this girl coming on horseback, and I'm just, you know, like, my heart stopped a little bit. Like, oh my god, they did bring her in, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They bring her in the books, but it's definitely, you know, with her being on horseback, let's say, a nod to her being the Night of Legendary.
She was a great horse rider. You know, anybody that knew her in Westeros, you know, in this universe, mentions that she's a good horse rider. I don't know as much Game of Thrones, but The Song of Ice and Fire, it's well known that she's a fantastic on horseback. Yeah, I really like that flashback too. I liked all the loyalists to Jon and how they even, it's a murky area, but they are still able to label Alistair Thorne and his men as mutineers because it is a mutiny, regardless of what their reasoning is. And then Arya and Tyrion, yeah, it feels like something that we were able to avoid in season 4 and season 5. It feels like
Pillman time?
Yeah, not exactly Pillman time, but just the plane circling the runway, waiting around for other things to happen before they push the narrative forward. And my argument against that is, then why include it at all? Especially in season 6, Tyrion and Arya are probably two of the most popular characters. You don't need to put them in episodes just to have them in episodes. But I guess HBO's argument against that is you do, because they're the most popular. People want to see them. A holding pattern is what it feels like.
Right.
How about Ramsay killing Roose? You saw that coming?
Not that correct. I thought it would happen eventually because I think they had to set up Ramsay being the guy.
Right.
I didn't think it was going to happen in episode 2 of the season. I thought it would happen a little bit later on down. I thought it would happen like midway to like the mid, you know, mid-late point, episode 6 or 7 type episode.
Right.
So that, in that regard, it actually was a shock that it did. Not that a shock that it happened, but a shock that it happened as quick as it did.
I think I did like this episode better than The Red Woman.
Yeah, I want to be a I'm gonna take off a quarter point from the Red Woman. I'm gonna get a 7.25 for the Red Woman.
You know what? I'm gonna increase a point from the Red Woman. I'm gonna meet you at 7.25. I like it a little bit better just because I was surprised by Ramsay killing Roose so early. You knew it's gonna happen, but I was surprised it happened so early.
I'm giving home 7.5. The Red Woman, I'm taking a quarter point off just to make this a third point.
Oh, okay. So Red Woman, you're doing 7.25. And then
7.5 for home.
Okay.
Just get that quarter point extra, plus it a flashback. I love the flashback.
Yeah.
John's Resurrection. I don't think with the Tyrion Arya stuff, I don't think I can justify giving like a 7.75 or an 8 because I think that'd be a little too high.
Okay.
So that's why I want this to fix the point that's there a little bit.
I don't want to linger on this episode too much, but John's Resurrection, I was not a fan of how they did it. I don't know why they didn't just have her do the Kiss of Life.
Well, spoiler alert, it might happen in season 7. They might say the Kiss of Life again for something else. I just always envision John's body being in the ice cells. This is just kind of like in a room. I feel it in the book. It's going to be a little more magical.
Yeah.
Then the show just really, they just didn't want to go that magical way with John in this regard. You know, maybe they're trying to hold back on it a little bit. Maybe in their defense, if they do something magical, how I think maybe how it is going to be in the books, it may be too obvious that John is the hero. You know, like they still kind of want to make it a little ambiguous. If they're doing a magical return resurrection, they might be like, okay, this guy's definitely the all-powerful warrior or something. Maybe the main thing in the site is to hold back on it.
Fair enough. Oathbreaker, directed by Daniel Sackheim, written by Benioff and Weiss. On a boat, on their way to Old Town, Samwell Tarly reveals his intention to leave Gilly and her baby with his former family at Horn Hill with the Tarlys as he trains to be a maester. In another vision of the past, Bran sees Eddard and Howland Reed, Mirror's father, defeat a group of Kingsguard loyal to the Targaryens at the Tower of Joy in Dorne. Varys discovers that the masters of Astapor, Yunkai, and Volantis have been financing the Sons of the Harpy. In King's Landing, Tommen converses with the High Sparrow, while Jaime and Cersei interrupt a small council meeting, only to be shunned by Kevin Lannister and the Tyrells. Arya trains rigorously with the Waif, and her sight is returned to her once she has accepted her role as no one. In Winterfell, a small John Umber asks Ramsay Bolton for help in protecting the North from wildlings, bringing Rickon Stark and Asha as a gift, along with the head of Shaggy Dog, Rickon's direwolf. Jon Snow executes Alistair Thorne, Ali, and the other officers involved in his assassination. He renounces his oath and puts Dolorous Ed Talat in charge of the Night's Watch. So, the name Oathbreaker refers to Jon, right?
It's always double meanings, triple meanings with this. Oathbreaker could be mainly Jon.
Yeah.
House Umber, portraying the Starks.
Yes.
To a degree, Ned Stark. And Oathbreaker, but Arthur Dayne being killed, stabbed from behind.
Ned broke their oath.
The way Ned killed him, I think it was more kind of like a mercy kill, though, too, at the same time. I think he knew that Arthur was going to die. He wasn't going to let him suffer, but...
That's pretty much the key scene of this episode. Either that the Tower of Joy or John executing the mutineers at the end of the episode. But those are really the A storylines in this in Oathbreaker. I know we talked the Tower of Joy scene to death, but real quick, what did you like about it the most? What did you dislike about the Tower of Joy scene the most?
Well, the two things I disliked about it was just the six on two. They didn't want to do the full 7-on-3. I think this would be a lot easier just doing 1-verse-4.
If you had to justify why they had 7-on-2...
6-on-2.
6-on-2. What would your reason be?
With it being so close to the actual number of 7-on-3, I don't understand why they changed it. If they did something like 4-on-1, then I can see, okay, they're just condensing it, you know?
Yeah.
Why condense it by one less person on each side? It's still the same result. It's still the same, you know, they still had 4 more people. You know, Ned's men was still a +4, you know, over the King's Guard. The other thing I didn't like about it, the dialogue there, you know, which is obviously different books.
Yeah, and it is like the most famous dialogue in the book.
It's the way he says it.
It was so far off.
It was just something that he's connected, like, the Mad King is dead, Rhaegar lays beneath the ground. He said it so much so that people get confused that the Mad King is Rhaegar.
Oh, yeah, right.
That a lot of people still get confused on that, and they didn't clarify it at all. The Mad King is dead, Rhaegar lies beneath the ground. There was no break in that they're actually two separate people. That was the only thing I really didn't like about the dialogue. Outside of that, I actually did like the dialogue. And then I liked when Eddard said, "Where's my sister? You're going to mention her."
Let's dispense of the pleasantries. If you're asking about your sister, shit's on. And how about John executing the mutineers?
Final scene. It was like 6 years to, you know, 6 years in the making of John killing Alistair Thorne.
Yep.
We've all been waiting for that to happen. You know, for a second, I thought he wasn't going to do it. You can see he didn't want to do it, but at the same time, it's like...
Got to do it.
He's got to do it. One thing that never gets really said is, how does the people feel about him coming back? Like, they think he's some sort of, you know, they say, like, you're some sort of god, I guess. I guess that was their way of saying it, I guess. They, you know, they think you're some sort of god.
Right.
I'm sure no one there ever seen someone come back from the dead before, so.
Well, they have, as whites.
Right.
That's an interesting connection. Everybody they've seen come back from the dead has been as a zombie. And Jon Snow comes back from the dead. So what are they supposed to think about that? And what does it say that Melisandre can raise people from the dead just like the Night's King? It's interesting parallels. I think on Oathbreaker, I'm going to go with an 8.
Really?
Yeah, I liked Oathbreaker. I liked Oathbreaker a lot. For all my complaints about the Tower of Joy, I do like that scene.
Funny, before the week before that, you saw like the Command Attractions. You saw the shot of the Tower of Joy. And, you know, I was getting excited. Like, oh my God, we're getting RLJ. We're getting RLJ.
Nah, we ain't getting RLJ.
And then, like, right before the episode came out, there was, like, a leak that said it's not going to happen tonight. They're just going to show one part of it. I said, how can they do that? There's no way. That's wrong. And then, lo and behold, yeah, you're going to have to wait. I'm going to give that episode, I'm going to do another 7.5.
Okay. Is that because we didn't get the entire Tower of Joy, or?
Yes.
Okay.
If they would have gotten the whole Tower of Joy, it would have been, like, a skyrocket.
Yeah, it would have been 10.
It would have been a 9.5. Yeah. 989 75599.
7.99999. Oh, we didn't even really talk about the end of Rick and Shaggy Dog, but
yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true too. And this is something that I argue with Daniel about. Daniel always thought with, you know, certain that it was a joke, it was a setup. So now that's really Rick in there. That's really Shaggy Dog. They had to make the numbers work out well. They had to put someone on Ramsey's side. They couldn't have, like, John with the Umbers, our Starks, and the Wildlings. And they would have to make up, like, all these different houses on the Bolton side.
Right. They're not that far off from A Song of Ice and Fire. In A Song of Ice and Fire, the Umbers are split. Half of them for Roose Bolton, and half of them still loyal to the Starks. Although it seems it's an inside job, and they're going to betray the Boltons, but who knows?
I don't even know at this point.
Honestly, it's been so long. I don't even remember what I was writing.
Pass over. I thought I killed them all. Damn it, we call you up.
Book of the Stranger, directed by Daniel Sackheim, written by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss. Sansa's party arrives at Castle Black, and she is reunited with Jon. In Meereen, Tyrion meets with the slave masters of Slaver's Bay to offer peace if they will end slavery within a period of 7 years, an action that angers the former slaves. Peter Baelish returns to the Vale to mobilize their soldiers against Ramsay Bolton. Dario Naharis learns about Jorah Mormont's grayscale as they arrive in Vaes Dothrak. In King's Landing, Queen Margaery is permitted to visit Ser Loras, while Cersei, Jaime, Kevin, and Olenna Tyrell put aside their differences and plan a defeat of the Sparrows. Theon Greyjoy arrives at Pyke and explains to Yara that he will support her claim at the Kingsmoot. In Winterfell, Asha attempts to assassinate Ramsay but is killed. Ramsay sends a letter to Jon threatening harm to Rickon if Sansa is not returned. Sansa convinces Jon to march south in order to take back Winterfell. Daenerys meets with the Khals in the temple of the Dash Kaleen after they refuse to serve her. She burns them and Khal Morrow to death. When she emerges unhurt, the Dothraki kneel to her. Really didn't like the fireproof Dany stuff. The Tyrion stuff, I mean, I didn't hate it. It was just there. But pretty much everything else in this episode I liked.
Right.
What'd you think of the Sansa-Jon reunion?
There was a leak before this episode that Jon was going to leave and then Sansa was going to come in and it wasn't going to happen. And as much as I can't stand Sansa Tully, much as, you know, I know for the fact that how she treated Jon, it was still awesome to see, you know, a reunion of the Starks.
Yeah.
Biggest reunion that we're hoping for. Honestly, I think Jon and Arya, I think, is the biggest one. I think that's going to be the one that's really going to be the saddest, happiest, you know, like, gobbling happens whenever it happens. But it was awesome to see, you know, like, the music they played. And this was when we first see Bran and Tormund seeing each other. That was kind of cool, but that was just kind of, still kind of a gag. It's not happening.
No, I don't think it's happening either, but it is funny.
Nice sort of Asha's death a mile away, or Yosha, whatever her name is.
Yeah. So that, as soon as she came in the room.
Yeah, like, dude, right, she's dead. Definitely dead. I saw this was someone saying, you know, because in that scene, Ramsay's like peeling an apple or something like that. And someone said, those halfway man can't peel an apple.
Was that like a meme?
Yeah. I like the stuff in this. I like the Greyjoy music.
I love the Greyjoy music.
Greyjoy music is really good, really underrated. The Gimme Danny stuff, again, fire, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to make a fireproof, you know, it is what it is. It's just fireproof. I don't like it, but I'm not writing the fucking show. That said, I do like that she got all of the Dothraki to her side. The Game of Thrones version of the pink letter. Ramsay sending the letter to Jon.
You're the last son, the last true warden of the North.
Oh, she lays it on thick with him.
Yeah, I look back on it. It's like Sansa just trying to use Jon, and that's why I don't like about it. I don't like her. I just hope she dies.
I don't think she's going to, dude.
If Jon dies in the end and she lives, I swear to God, I will not talk about this guy in the end. I would not even talk about this series ever again. I really won't.
What if she die? What if Jon dies to save her?
God.
Book of Strangers, I'm going to go 8.25.
I'm telling you, just go back and watch this episode and watch when she comes out from the burning.
Oh, with Jorah?
With Jorah, I'm telling you. Again, everyone's looking at her. And then everyone's like kneeling down with their head down. And like Jorah's just like lifting his head up. And he passes to see her naked body. Like, oh my God, couldn't you see? This is great.
Try to sneak a peek.
Almost stalkerishly looking at her. Definitely a nice little thing that D&D did there. Or the director did. You know, whoever the director was, whatever his name was, did there. Nice little, you know, shot that he did. But it just ends in fire. And I just wanted to coincide with the next episode. For this episode, I'm going to give 7.75. I can't give it an 8 because the whole entire Danny fireproof.
All right.
Lose it a quarter point because I can't stand, you know, oh, she's fireproof. No, she's not.
She's not. No, nobody is.
And that's another issue, too, where I think in the book, I think it's going to be more like Drogon's going to appear, and they just wanted to save some dragon and CGI and just have her do that.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I don't see why they need to be saving budget money at this point, but I'll buy it. Episode 5, The Door, directed by Jack Bender, written by Benioff and Weiss. Sansa meets Peter Baelish, who offers the support of the Vale and tells her that Brendan Tully, her great-uncle, is gathering an army at Riverrun. She initially refuses his help. Jon and Sansa leave Castle Black to gather support from the other northern houses, with her sending Brienne to help Brendan Tully. In Braavos, Arya is given a second chance to prove her loyalty by killing an actress. Beyond the Wall, Bran learns that the White Walkers were created by the Children of the Forest to protect themselves from the First Men. In the Iron Islands, Euron wins the Kingsmoot despite confessing to killing Baelin, causing Yara and Theon to flee. In Essos, Daenerys learns about Jorah Mormont's grayscale, ordering him to find a cure and return. In Meereen, a Red Priestess named Kinvara meets Tyrion and Varys and promises to support Daenerys. Bran's unaccompanied vision causes him to be touched by the Night King, making the cave vulnerable. The Night King, along with the White Walkers and hordes of Wights, attack the cave, killing the Three-Eyed Raven, several children, Summer, and Hodor, whose younger self is shown to have been rendered mentally disabled by Bran's interference. Hold the Door. What do you think of The Door?
Definitely think it's one of the impactful episodes. Hold the Door scene was the second of the three twists that George R. Martin told D&D, the first one being Shireen's sacrifice. So it's definitely going to be something that is going to happen in the books. Like a whole lot of things will happen in the books that we see. First thing that he said is Bran was told, you know, Bran goes to do this stuff without guidance, without, you know, when he knows it's wrong to do it. He, you know, he sees the Three-Eyed Raven falling asleep or sleeping, and, you know, he's going to touch the Weirwood tree then.
Yeah.
He knows for a fact he should be doing it. Kind of like when Catelyn Tully told him not to climb. What's he doing? He's going to climb.
He's going to climb.
Bran's a scumbag. He really is. No, I'm serious. He's a Tully, and this is what he does. He screws things up, and I still think he's going to screw things up, because now, you know, he's going to go through the wall, and now the Knights can go through the wall because of him. This is why they say, I don't know this. He's going to screw even more up. He just can't help himself. You know, Tully going to Tully. Before I forget, well, we'll talk more about Hold the Door. I get the scene itself. And it's just really sad, you know, kind of like And we see Rick Hardstark, but it's almost kind of like we sort of the young Hodor.
Yes.
It was almost kind of like, oh, wait a minute. He's going to do, you didn't see it coming, but like once they interchanged the scenes, you could definitely see it coming, that was the reason why he says Hodor all the time. You know, you can see that there is some sort of time travel stuff going on.
Yeah, the time travel stuff is, listen, I get it in terms of the Weirwood, but I don't get it in terms of, it had to have already happened for him to be saying Hodor this whole time. So it's like a time loop kind of thing.
The time loop.
Like, he didn't alter time. He was always going to do that. It hurts my head when I think about it too much.
I got to explain somehow, some way, the next 13 episodes. You see the death, the second week in a row, we see a death of a direwolf. Summer dies.
Yeah, didn't like the way Summer went out.
Definitely the fact that his direwolf name's Summer, and you think he's going to be around at the end to help him. That's how I always thought. I always thought Summer would be around. I never would think that Summer would die, actually.
Brutal to the direwolves this season.
Speaking of direwolf, Sansa and Jon and company head south. I said once again, where the hell's Ghost?
Yeah.
You don't even see him. You don't even see him.
It's not even like, all right, Ghost, you stay here at the wall.
Right. Look down. You don't even see him trotting behind Jon or trotting in front or anything. No, you don't even see him. It's like you don't even see him on the speaking wheel.
Yeah, it seems the direwolves and the Kingsguard were kind of just killed off in season 6. Were their importance at, anyway?
This isn't the episode with, it's the next episode is when Jaime confronts Tommen, right?
That's the next episode. Yeah, we're not at King's Landing this episode.
We're not, okay. Another thing about the door, Ramin Djawadi again.
Just, oh, man.
The music is just killer, you know, in that scene.
Yeah.
And we see the Night's King being created. Whether that's just the show's version of it or how it really happened, it's anyone's guess on that. But I think that's got to be something that they know or something. That's how it was created. It was created, they were created by the Children of the Forest. Because it wouldn't make sense if the Children of the Forest wanted to kill men and all.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think that it has to happen something similar to that.
Would you be okay if there was no origin for the White Walkers? Like they just came from the lands of Always Winter, and you know they came thousands of years ago. They're back again now. You don't know their origins.
No, I think I would like to know the origin.
Okay.
I think I would like to know it. Interesting theory, and I texted you a couple weeks ago. I don't think I really believe in it, but it's kind of an interesting one that I read or I saw on YouTube that obviously they use a person looking like Isaac Hempstead Wright to be too much of a giveaway, but that the Night's King is actually Bran Stark.
Right. I mean, I don't like it, but...
I actually kind of like it. I don't buy it. I don't think it's actually going to happen in that regard. But the theory was that Bran goes off wandering in these flashbacks, and you wander off too much, you get caught in them. And since Bran, the Children of Forest don't know who Bran is, they see Bran as this guy, this man walking, so they take him captive and then turn him into the Night's King. And it actually be kind of cool, Tully gun Tully. But I don't think it'll happen that way. And it was just an interesting theory that I had seen. I think it was on YouTube. I forgot who it was by. I forgot the name. I apologize that who came up with that theory.
Too much time travel for that to be the case. And I don't think that he can physically go back in time. Just spiritually. I don't think he can exist in twice in the same... I don't think so. It's interesting, but I don't think so.
Might be a little crack-pottish, but at least it's an interesting crack-pottish theory.
The King's Moot was disappointing for me, but I kind of knew it was going to be.
Yeah, you're a big Greyjoy guy, so I kind of...
I love the King's Moot, but I knew it was going to be disappointing. I knew we weren't going to get the King's Moot. With that in mind, as far as serving the Season 6 narrative, I'm okay with the King's Moot that we got. Except I just don't like how quickly the Ironborn can build a navy.
I was just going to say
that. Yeah, it's not.
Yara takes all the ships, and then they're still going to make, you know, just as many ships. Faster ships, better ships.
And then what's the deal with navies? Like, between fucking Marine and the Iron Islands, like, people, like, just nobody watches the boats. They're just like, yeah, the boats will be fine. Don't worry about it. And you got people burning entire navies, stealing entire fleets. You know, we should really have at least one person watching these boats, and if they see something suspicious, just like blow a horn or something. They really got to rethink their security. That in mind, I'm going to go with an 8.25 again for the door.
All right, I agree with that 8.25 scoring.
All right, this is John's first date for season 6.
Yeah.
Blood of My Blood, episode 6, season 6, directed by Jack Bender once again, written by Brian Cogman. Bran and Mira are saved by Benjen, who reveals that he was turned by the White Walkers, but was later unturned by the children using dragonglass. Samwell and Gilly reach the Tarly estate, Horn Hill. Sam's father, Randall, insults her for being a wildling. Sam decides to take her with him to the Citadel, and he steals House Tarly's ancestral Valyrian steel sword, Heartsbane. Arya warns the actress that she has to murder about her mission to assassinate her. She recovers Needle. Jack and Hagar approves of the Waif's request to kill Arya. Ser Jaime attempts to rescue Margaery from the Faith Militant, only to find she has repented, and Tommen has forged an alliance with the Faith. He removes Jaime from the Kingsguard and orders him to help Walder Frey, who is holding Edmure Tully hostage, and to retake Riverrun from the Blackfish. Daenerys mounts Drogon and declares to the Dothraki that they will sail across the Narrow Sea to conquer Westeros. Blood of My Blood. We see Benjen. When was the last time we saw Benjen? Was it like season 1, episode fucking 2? Or
2, 3, or 4.
Yeah. And I haven't seen that actor in anything else, so I'm sure he was really happy to get the call.
Hey, dude, he was waiting for 5 years, like.
Yeah, I don't mind, you know, being like every episode. What did you think of it? He was turned to a White Walker, but was later unturned by the children using dragon glass.
He's just like helping him out every 2 seconds. It seems pretty insane.
Bran's like, he's like, could you leave us a horse? He's like, no, this will help you to become ready for the Night's King. This is part of your training. What did you think of the adaptation of Randall Tarly?
I thought it was consistent with how he was described in the books. You know, setting there, that was, you really feel bad for Samwell. You know, and that all these things that Samwell left, or Lily with Gilly was telling him what Sam had done, he killed the White Walker. You know, you think that maybe the father would be impressed, and no, he wasn't.
No, he does not like Sam.
Kind of like, you know, we were talking about Goodfellas before, but that's kind of like, you know, Spider telling Tommy to go fuck himself.
Yeah.
Take the sword.
Yeah.
Shit from no one, Sam. Take the sword.
And what's it like, they don't have anybody walk him out? Like, is this, I guess, not a fully functioning noble house? You would think he'd have a doorman or like a, you know, some sort of attendant, somebody keeping an eye on the Valyrian steel sword. And how far is Sam going to get before they notice it's gone? Like, it's... That's got to come back into play, I hope. And Randall Tarly, he was true to his characterization.
Well, Samwell's going to take the sword to the Citadel because it's Valyrian steel. He's, you know, going to see what's in the sword that can kill White Walkers. You know, we know what it is, but, you know, how can we get more?
Randall Tarly was true to his characterization in A Song of Ice and Fire, but just his station. He's Mace Tyrell's right-hand man. He's the best at Warcraft in the South. And that part they excluded. Really... Everything good about the Reach, the south of Westeros, they kind of ixnayed on that and just include the characters and, you know, their negative characteristics, which is fine. It's okay. It's fine. I understand. But, you know, whenever we get one of these major characters from the south, it's a disappointment. How about Arya? She does not assassinate the actress, and she tells the actress that someone's trying to assassinate her, and she recovers Needle. So she's giving up on being a faceless man. I always thought that she would see that through and an assassination would bring her back to Westeros. I think that's been the standing theory for quite a few years before Game of Thrones, was that she'd be sent to assassinate Daenerys or Cersei or Sansa.
Right, a lot of people thought that, like, she would have to go on some sort of mission to kill an important character. And there was a theory, but it is out there that someone will be, you know, go on an assassination attempt. But she can't kill Jon Snow because they're not allowed to kill anyone that they know. She wouldn't be able to kill Sansa or anything like that. Not allowed to.
Okay.
But there is a theory that she will go on an attempt to kill someone. Yeah, I thought about it. It is in the first act. I forgot to rewrite that because I have that character living in the third act.
I couldn't decide, so I went to the movies.
We watched the Giant King.
Oh, my God, that's coming up. That's football season.
I just saw someone write that he's got 90 days, and he doesn't get the book printed, or like in for review and printed, it's too late for officially too late for 2017 for 2017 release.
It's too late for 2017 release. With spoiler, it's too late. Oh, this fucking asshole. I hate him so much.
One thing I forgot to mention, the Book of the Stranger, it ended with fire. The door ended with ice. I forgot to mention that in episode 5.
That is interesting. Jamie being removed from Kingsguard, Tommen being...
I didn't love that, but I loved him going up the stairwell and, like, he being that he wanted all of a sudden that little prick Tommen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. He's freaking Cersei's children. My God.
You believe that Jamie took a step backwards as a character in season 6. Regressed.
I don't really see. What do you mean, I mean, regressed?
He's more Cersei-like. He was how he is season 1, season 2, season 3 on his journey. He kind of grew a little bit. Season 4, season 5, he's trying to be the best Lord Commander he can be. But season 6...
Well, just see that every time he's around Cersei, he's different when he's not around Cersei.
Okay. Now, do you think they do that on purpose?
Yes. It's got to be a setup for something.
You like Jaime Lannister, no?
Kind of like lukewarm water, I guess you'd say.
He's a lukewarm water? All right.
Lukewarm water.
Fair enough.
The thing about Jaime is I'm very interested in what happens to him in his story going forward. For whatever reason, I'm very interested. Probably outside of Jon, the second person I'm interested in, but I'm just really curious what he's going to be doing. You know, specifically the books with this whole Brienne and Lady Stoneheart, I'm really interested in what's going on and what's going to happen there.
Okay.
So what did you score? What else happened?
I'm trying to think if there's anything else that's interesting. A couple holding pattern scenes with Daenerys mounting Drogo, declaring the Dothraki they will sail across the narrow sea to conquer Westeros. Like, duh. You've been telling us that for 5 years. Like, yeah, we get it. So just do it.
In fact, I lowered it down there because of the speech. I'm actually going to lower it again. This speech is just...
Yeah. I didn't dislike it, but each episode was getting better. This feels like kind of a... I think it's more of like a calm before the storm, but it's kind of like a regroup episode. From the emotional high of the door, just catching the breath, blood in my blood. I'm going to go back to the sevens. I'm going to go seven. I'm going to go pretty hard on this one. Because there is no one scene that makes it amazing.
I'm going to go 6.75.
Oof. Down below a seven, huh?
Yes, just the speech. Speech and Arya stuff. And I'm sure there's probably a Tyrion scene in there too or something. That I'm just like, no, I trick and I know things.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
All right, we need another Tyrion scene. Just write another Tyrion scene. All right, 7 and 6.75 for Blood of My Blood. So far, that is the season worst episode. Episode 7, The Broken Man, written by Mark Mylod. I'm sorry, directed by Mark Mylod, written by Brian Cogman. Margaery convinces Lady Olenna to return to Highgarden after the High Sparrow says that he will pursue Olenna following her attempt to engage the Faith. Jon, Sansa, and Davos recruit the Wildlings and House Mormont to their cause, but they remain outnumbered by the Boltons. In desperation, Sansa writes a letter begging for aid. Jaime arrives in Riverrun with Bronn, and he assumes control of the siege of Riverrun. Jaime goes to parley with Brendan Tully, ultimately being unsuccessful. Theon and Yara spend their last night in Volantis, deciding to sail to Meereen to ally with Daenerys. In Braavos, Arya prepares to return to Westeros, but is attacked by the Waif. Arya is badly wounded, but escapes. Sandor is revealed to be alive, having been saved by a Septon and his followers. When men from the Brotherhood threaten and eventually slaughter the group, Sandor decides to get revenge. So this was a cold open episode, and the first cold open episode we've had since...
Season 4?
Yeah, Two Swords for season 4. And only the fourth cold open overall. And it's a cold open to introduce Sandor Clegane, who I guess HBO, Benioff, Weiss, they all felt that this would be a big surprise. And I guess they thought that Sandor Clegane is a fan favorite character. I think they're right on both accounts. But the problem here is that the Septon, played by, God, I always forget this motherfucker's name. He's in American Gods now. He's playing Odin from Deadwood. That guy. Ian McShane. Ian McShane gave away that Sandor Clegane would be returning. If you read A Song of Ice and Fire closely, you know that he is still alive and that he is living with Septons and that he has changed his ways. But my question to you, John, is Does Sandor Clegane in The Broken Man appear to be a different man than the one begging Arya to kill him at the end of season 4?
I don't think so.
Not that different, right?
No, especially at the end, it's just like, he's the same guy.
Yeah, he just grabs that axe and goes for revenge. Were you happy to see Sandor Clegane?
Yeah, I don't like Sandor. I kind of expected it to happen. I didn't like the story that, you know, in the show. I didn't like Ian Machine's character. I didn't like stuff he was saying up there. It's just like, you know, he was just mailing in for a paycheck.
Yeah.
And I like the ending of it. I like him going off for revenge because, like, that's his type of character to do that. And I don't get, like, how all of a sudden feels so much compassion for, like, you know. I wasn't a big fan, simply now going back and thinking of this stuff. So I wasn't a real big fan of this, the main stuff of Broken Man being Sandor Clegane. Also, Broken Man can also mean, you know, kind of like House Stark, though, because, you know, they weren't getting the allegiance from House Glover and all that. House Stark is dead.
You know, that being said, the parlay, again, is one of my favorite parts about The Feast for Crows. I love that parlay. I think it's some of George R. Martin's best writing, is that parlay between Jaime and Sir Brendan Tully. It's not going to be as good as that. I knew it wasn't going to be. But compared with The Kingsmoot, as far as an adaptation, I think it's head and shoulders better. And I did enjoy the parlay, because I think it adds to Jaime's character, the parlay. I liked Theon's characterization with Yara when they're in Volantis and when they decide to go to Meereen to ally with Daenerys.
I actually didn't like that at all.
Really?
I thought that was coming time.
Well, you know what? It could have been condensed. You know, they could have said it in the episode when they escaped the Kingsmoot. I was into it because they were at Volantis and Yara and her men were all enjoying themselves. And it's like they weren't taking anything seriously, but Theon is taking everything seriously. And maybe it's because he doesn't have a dick anymore. But he is thinking more about the future and what they should do, whereas Yara is just enjoying the present. And it kind of shows a good dynamic between them, because if you remember back to season 2, whatever episode where Yara comes to visit him and tells him, burn the castle, come with me. Her thinking about the future and Theon not. Him just so hell-bent on being the Prince of Winterfell. You know, and now the situations are kind of reversed. So I think it speaks a lot to their relationship, and I did enjoy it. Could have been done better. House Mormont, we get the introduction of Lyanna Mormont, who really is the breakout star for season 6.
I'm sure if I mentioned it, but surprised that we didn't see Davos bringing up, you know, that John's got long claw because Jared gave it to him or something.
Right.
Out of honor, because, you know, John saved his life. He got revenge on Jared's life by killing the men who killed Jared Mormont.
Right, or play up the fact that John was killed and he rose from the dead. Maybe he's magical. I don't know. Yeah, they could have done a better job recruiting.
But I do like that scene, though. It's, you know, 62 men. 62 men.
Yeah, I think the only scene I did not like in The Broken Man is the Arya scene, and the reason, we talked about it already, Arya shows she's very un-Arya-like in that scene, and the wound that she's given is...
And what's funny is she does go back to get needles, so it's like she does know that, you know, as I said before, she does know that her life could be in danger, and then it's just like, you know...
Right. She's well aware of what's going on, but she's just like, she'll be all right, it's just an old lady. But it's not just that. It's the fucking stomach wound she gets also. Give her any other, stab her in the side, or she goes to stab her and Arya spins and she gets her in the leg or the shoulder or something, but, or stab her once in the gut. And she stabbed her like fucking 3 times in the gut.
Yeah.
You don't survive gut wounds. And believe me, that takes a lot away from this episode. I'm going to go 8.5 for The Broken Man.
Wow.
Yeah, that's my season high so far.
Wow. Oh, man.
I think, honestly, dude, if it wasn't for the Arya, I think I might have hit a 9.
I'm going to go, I didn't like the beginning part with the Hound.
See, I did.
I didn't like it that much. I'm going to give it 6.75 again.
Oof, bro. We are so far apart on that one.
That's a far cry.
That's 2 under 7 scores in a row for you.
Tough critic.
Yeah, man, end up working where season 6 may be your favorite, but not numerically, it sure ain't.
The last 2 episodes are definitely going to pass.
Yeah.
Good, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. No One, directed by Mark Mylod, written David Benioff, D.B. Weiss. Tommen abolishes trial by combat, much to the dismay of Cersei, planned to win her trial by combat using Sir Gregor.
I still think the head of Sir Gregor is Robert Baratheon's head, I'm telling you.
I don't see how they kept it Maybe. That'd be a cool twist. It'd be cool if he talked like him, too.
Why do the name Robert for?
Well, I don't think he's Robert in Game of Thrones. Brienne arrives in River Run and attempts to persuade the Blackfish to surrender without success. After Jaime threatens to kill Edmure's young son, he enters the castle and orders, Edmure this is, enters the castle and orders the Tully forces to stand down. But Brendan is killed fighting the Lannisters. Off-screen death.
Off-screen.
Brienne and Podrick escape.
Jaime waves goodbye.
Jaime waves goodbye, and he's relieved he doesn't have to fight Brienne. Lord Varys departs Meereen on an unknown mission. Meereen comes under a naval assault by the slavers, but Daenerys returns with her dragon.
That's one of the worst shots, maybe, in the Pulitzer 60. That's top five worst shots. It's just so...
Which one?
When Daenerys just, like, walks through the top of the pyramid, like...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dude, it was so bad.
Sandor kills the outlaws who sacked his village and encounters Beric Dondarrion and Thoros of Myr, who explain that the outlaws were not part of the Brotherhood, they were renegades. Then they try to convince Sandor to join the Brotherhood, successfully, might I add. Arya is taken in by the actress who heals her wounds with soup and a nap. In the morning, the waif arrives. She kills the actress and chases Arya through the streets of Braavos. Arya leads the waif into the catacombs and kills her because she can fight in the dark because she was blind.
Did you hear the theory of that? Did I tell you the theory of
that? The waif is Arya right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting for the sake of being interesting, but doesn't make any sense. She returns the waif's face to the house of Black and White and declares that she is not no one. She is Arya Stark of Winterfell. She's going home. And Jaqen H'ghar is impressed with her. And maybe just glad that the waif is dead, because the waif was one intolerable bitch. I did not like the Arya stuff. And even just the running through Braavos, like, you know, the waif is like Robert Patrick from Terminator, but Arya's got these gut wounds. You can't run.
Jumping, she's falling down.
Can't do it, man. Lena Headey's acting when Tommen abolishes trial by combat is just off the charts.
But like the last, just like the Patriots always have, like, oh, Wyvern, what about the rumor? Oh, there's more of it. It's like, oh, don't worry, got a plan B. Don't worry.
Did you know what she was referring to?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I had an idea it was Wildfire, but I didn't think she was going to do what she did. I like the Jaime scene again.
Loved all the Jaime stuff. I loved House Tully showing their true colors again, being completely the worst house in all Westeros.
Well, I mean, Jaime, you know, he tries to go the non-Tywin Lannister route and just convince Edmure to surrender. And Edmure's like, no way, Kingslayer. So then Jaime's like, all right, you want me to be the monster you think I am? I'll be the monster you think I am. If you don't get Riverrun to surrender, I'm going to kill your little baby. Somebody that they're trying to convince the audience is a good guy. That's not a good guy thing to say, but it is a Tywin Lannister thing to say. And I think it all plays into Jaime's maturing. And I really did like that scene. Meereen under a naval assault is just a setup for the next week. I like the team up of Sandor with Beric Dondarrion and Thoros of Myr. I'm glad that we saw them again. I really like the guy that they have, the second Beric Dondarrion. I'm not a big fan of the first Beric Dondarrion.
No, definitely not.
But the second one I like, and Thoros of Myr I like. But a lot of this episode was Arya, and it's not good. It's not bad. It's good action. Don't get me wrong. It's good action, and I like how she tricks the waif and kills her. And I like when she brings the face to the house and says she's Arya Stark and going home. It was a goosebumps and inspiring scene, but you didn't get the goosebumps because the build-up to it was not very well thought out and not very well executed. So I'm going to go a season low for no one. And I'm going to go 6.75. And I would go lower, but I really like the Jaime scene.
I would actually like to go higher than I'm going to, but I just can't because of the Arya scene and the one shot at Danny just being so dopey.
Yeah.
It was simply Arya. I'd love to go 7.5, but I have to go 7.25 because I really do like the Jaime stuff with Edmure and the opening scene with him and Brienne. Like it a lot.
You know what? This No One is a good Jaime episode ruined by Arya.
Yeah, like if the Arya scene wasn't so bad, I'd be at the 7.5.
Yeah, I would be in the 7s also. Because that Jaime stuff is really good. And the Cersei stuff in this one's really good. Now we get the... Unless you got something else to say about No One.
Nope.
All right, so now we get the 1-2 punch. Both directed by Miguel Sapochnik. Both written by Benioff and Weiss. And we start with episode 9. Battle of the Bastards. Daenerys meets with the slave masters to negotiate terms of surrender, but they refuse it. And she only does this because Tyrion convinces her to. Riding Drogon, as Rhaegal and Viserion assist, Daenerys attacks and burns the slaver's fleet. Grey Worm kills two of the Masters, leaving one to tell of what he had witnessed. After the battle, Theon and Yara meet with Daenerys and Tyrion and agree to an alliance. Near Winterfell, the Stark and Bolton armies meet on the field. Ramsay feigns setting Rickon free, but kills him with a long-distance arrow before Jon can save him. In the battle, the Stark forces are pinned by Bolton soldiers, but they're rescued by the Knights of the Vale. Ramsay flees inside Winterfell, but the wilding giant, 1-1, having taken numerous arrows to his body, manages to break down the gate before succumbing to his wounds. Jon brutally beats Ramsay and takes him prisoner. Sansa later visits Ramsay's cell in the kennels and watches as his starving hounds devour him. Reading that synopsis doesn't do Battle of the Bastards justice. For me, the story of this episode is the direction by Miguel Sapochnik and the actual battle, the way it was filmed, the suffocating feelings, almost like watching Saving Private Ryan when you're down there with Jon in the battlefield. That one shot of Jon drawing his sword when he realizes the mistake he's made, when he realizes he walked right into Ramsay's trap.
So epic.
Pulls that sword, and for a brief moment during my initial watch, I thought that sword was going to come afire and it was going to be Lightbringer. I don't know why I thought this, but that's what I thought. Obviously, it didn't happen. And what we get, having watched all of the major battles, Blackwater, Watchers on the Wall, Hardhome, Battle of the Bastards, is the best epic battle in Game of Thrones. And it should be, because they had the biggest budget for it. But it was a different feel to it. It focused less on epic heroism and more on suffocating realism. To have that going with the battle at Slaver's Bay, which was just a one-sided bloodbath.
Well, if you want a bloodbath.
Yeah, this is a bloodbath. I think this episode is absolutely excellent. And I think it functions as a climax to a part of a climax to the season-long buildup. And I definitely want to talk about it more, but I'm going to give it a 9.5. John, your thoughts?
Even before the battle, I love the scene between John's men and Ramsay's men. And a very important scene. Because once again, we saw it in season one when Jaime went to Rob, me versus you. Take whatever weapon you want.
Right.
Whoever wins, that will be the winner of this war. Thousands of people
will save all these lives.
Lives will be saved. John says it again here. How about just me and you? No one has to die out here. Just me and you. I'm trying to think of right now who has the theory. It might be Tony Teflon. But he thinks at the end that John will face the Night's King one-on-one.
I want to see a big battle.
We're going to see a big battle, but then they're going to... John's going to realize he can't win that battle. He just can't. All the men that die on his side become on their side.
Right.
Just can't. For every kill they get, it's like a double kill. It's like, you know, you play war.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You're playing war and you just can't win. Two kings, then you got to play the three cards down, and next, you know, he's got Knights, he's got an ace, and you got a jack, and well, he's going to take your cards. It involves Bran. Bran's going to have to, like, mentally speak, or again, you know, the Knights came to agree to this. That sounds a little hokey, but there will be a one-on-one fight. No one else will have to die, and then Jon will defeat the Knights King.
I like it.
Even if it doesn't have exactly like that, but this is the second time now that they brought that up. It has not come to fruition. Like, no one's agreed to the one-on-one. I mean, obviously, at the end of the Battle of Bastards, you know, Ramsay.
Right, Ramsay's like, I'll do the one-on-one now.
No one's agreed to this one-on-one. It feels like the show is teasing us with this one-on-one. We're not going to have a big battle. No one else has to die. Just me versus you. Whoever wins, that's the side that's going to win.
All right.
We also do see Sansa and Jon get into argument about, you know, obviously Sansa, the lying, deceiving bitch that she is, and not telling Jon the truth.
Right.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Sansa comes in there at the end, and then she sees Jon from across, you know, getting up and going after the Ramsay. She has that look on her face. Do you think that look was like, oh, damn, he's alive? Damn it. I don't think it was.
I don't think it was. I think she...
It's just a funny look that they gave. Like, they could have, you know, maybe it was more look like, oh, my God, oh, he is alive. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it'd be more like she's surprised that he's alive. And I think that Jon impressed her. And I think she was prepared for Jon to be dead. I don't think she thought that Jon would survive.
She wanted Jon to die. She wants Jon to die because she wants all the power.
I don't think so. I mean,
She's a Tully.
Yeah.
Sean, you're falling for her now, Sean. You're forgetting she's a Tully.
Yeah.
Now, you gave it a 9.5.
I'm going 9.5.
I'm also going to go with the 9.5.
Nice, John. Nice.
Only reason why I can't go higher is because the next episode is actually going to be higher.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And I don't want to go. I don't want to go perfect 10 because we still have 13 episodes.
Right, you can't go perfect 10.
No. You got anything else to add with the Battle of the Bastards? Rickon's run? They can weave, dodge and weave, bro. Side to side.
What's Rickon's favorite band? One Direction.
One Direction. Maybe he thought that he was just playing a game. He didn't realize how serious it was. Okay, episode 10, The Winds of Winter. Directed again by Miguel Sapochnik, written by Benioff and Weiss. When I first saw the name for this episode, I thought it was Benioff and Weiss poking fun at George R. R. Martin for how lethargic and useless he is. But it does fit. Before her trial, Cersei destroys the Sept of Baelor with wildfire, killing the High Sparrow, Margaery Tyrell, Mace Tyrell, Loras Tyrell, Lansa Lannister, Kevin Lannister, along with hundreds of King's Landing nobles, the Faith Militant, while Qyburn has Grand Maester Pycelle killed. Tommen can't live with it, and he commits suicide. In Dorne, Varys meets with Lady Olenna Tyrell and Ilaria Sand, seeking to form an alliance between Daenerys and their houses against the Lannisters. Davos Seaworth confronts Melisandre over the death of Shireen, and Jon banishes her from Winterfell. The Wildings, the Knights of the Vale, and the surviving houses of the North pledge loyalty to Jon as the new king in the North. Sansa stops Peter Baelish from getting intimate with her. Hey, Arya kills Walder Frey and his sons. Samwell Tarly and Gilly reach the Citadel in Old Town. Benjen tells Brandon and Mira to pass the wall without him. Bran uses his powers and learns that Jon is actually the son of Lyanna Stark and Rhaegar Targaryen, being adopted by Eddard after Lyanna died during Robert's Rebellion. Jaime returns to King's Landing to find Qyburn crowning Cersei as the new monarch of the Seven Kingdoms. Daenerys Targaryen leaves Daario Naharis and the Second Sons to rule Meereen before she sets sail to Westeros with her companions, with her armies, and with her dragons. And that, my friend, is the end of season 6. So first off, that opening scene was one of the most tense and anxiety-inducing things I've ever watched on television. It was crazy.
One of my first things you want to talk about, not anxiety,
sure.
Because it wasn't anxiety necessarily for me, because the Lannisters just can stick a freaking bomb up all their asses and just kill themselves. So let them die, which is more happy and happy for me to do that, but for some reason, I thought the way they did it, I thought Cersei was going to have Tommen killed. I know it would go
really
completely against her character, but they definitely set up as if Greer Clegane was there and was actually going to kill Tommen. That's how I took it when I first was watching it. So it goes against her character of loving her children and completely wrong. But that was my first instinct.
It does, but it's also, she was prepared for them to die. She's been prepared for them to die.
Right. Well, I think especially when Marcella died, I think now she realizes, you know, it's not just, the prophecy is kind of, yeah, it's probably true.
Yeah.
Joffrey died, Marcella died, yeah. Tom, I'm not going to tell you, but you're going to die.
But I love knocking out all those B characters. And yeah, just the Sparrow, High Sparrow storyline, I was...
Some of them were C characters.
Yeah, yeah. And a couple D characters there, too. Did you like the Dorne scene? Varys showing up with Olenna and Ilaria.
Didn't like. I didn't not like it. Expected at that... You know, it just goes through my mind. It was like the NWO, kind of. There was this one episode where, like, all these guys, they set these like, two guys at WCW up, and, like, they're supposed to do the interview. Is this who's in the NWO at this point? And, like, this guy's going to the NWO, this guy's going to the NWO. Lex Luger comes out, everyone thinks he's on WCW side, and all of a sudden, you know, he goes on the NWO side. It's like, you see all, like, the Martells and Alina and then Barry's.
Yeah, yeah, I got you.
How come they're in the NWO?
There's the real Sting. That's the real Stinger. Go get him, Stinger.
Get him, Stinger.
Talk about slow burn, dragging that's, stuff out.
That's so much potential, and they wasted it.
Yeah, it was good for a little while.
Scott Hall says even to this day, it should have been them three plus acts like two more guys.
Right.
And that's it.
I feel like DiBiase was the last guy to join where it was like, all right, that's cool. And then it was like, then it was just out of control.
Was it like that DiBiase and then Bishop? Like, but then, yeah, Bishop, why is DiBiase? Then Rich Rude came. It's like, you have all these guys who couldn't wrestle anymore. It's like, it just got so ridiculous.
And they had won. Like you won. You got everybody. So, what's the point then?
At some point, everyone except for Bill Goldberg.
Yeah, and Sting.
And maybe, no, Sting was in, no, Sting was in the NWO Wolfpack.
Oh, my God, dude, the Wolfpack, right. Yeah, okay. No, the Wolfpack's awesome. No, they're not. They're not awesome. Incorrect. You're not correct. They're not awesome.
But yeah, that just reminded me, oh, by golly, he's in the NWO. Oh, my God.
That's my issue going into season 7, and how do you take House Lannister seriously? Granted, they sit the Iron Throne, but they were in the War of the Five Kings. Dorne was not. The Tyrells were briefly. They supposedly have more power than the Lannisters right now. So you combine them with the Dothraki, with the Unsullied. Like, how is Cersei to stand a chance against Daenerys Targaryen? And I'm sure it's not going to be as simple as that. But that being said, how can anybody stand Daenerys Targaryen? She set out the War of the Five Kings. She wasn't involved. All these other houses are still feeling the effects of that war. So I don't know. You know, unless the Lannisters get like an influx of volunteers or able to, raise a couple hosts over at Lannisport. But I don't see that happening. But that's something to worry about for the season coming. You know, I do like that the Tyrells and the Martells join forces with Daenerys. Like you said, more likely Dorne joins the sides of young Griff. Of Aegon Targaryen in the books, but they're not going that route. It makes sense then that they join with Daenerys.
Right, and then I think it's, and I would have to just mean, my prediction is that in the books, Dany will overcome and realize that Fagin is, young Griff is a fake, and she will defeat him.
Yes.
And that is completely the reason why there are no Fagin in the show, because Dany. Or someone. I'm going to assume Dany, because I don't think Cersei will have the people behind her, the fate, to take on a Targaryen at that point, because they'll be welcoming him. I think Dany's just going to overtake him in the books, and that's, Fagin is going to be like a Shaggy Bill character. He's going to do some stuff, but his end, it's like a dud.
Yeah, okay.
So they're just going to give, like, in the show, they're just going to give Dany all, like, Fagin's, like, allies, you know, like, I mean, possibly the Tyrells, the Martells. Give them right away, give them to Dany.
Agreed.
Was there any low point in this episode for it before you go on to the other major stuff?
Not really.
Good, yeah, I'm just trying to think. There really wasn't anything bad. I mean,
I don't want to call it a flawless episode, but, you know, we haven't even talked about the main stuff other than Cersei's assassination of the queen and her family and her uncle and the High Sparrow. You know, we haven't even talked about the Jon stuff and the House of the Tower of Joy. And it's all good. You know, Arya killing Walder Frey. Even Sam at Old Town was interesting.
Very interesting, because what they showed on top is the same stuff that they showed, whatever that thing is called, is what we see in the beginning of the intro.
Yeah.
And it sets up next season with Sam Wilson going to the Citadel. What's he going to be learning? What's he going to be reading? What's he going to be finding out? What documents from Kingsguard is he going to read? Spoiler.
What Kingsguard documents are going to read? Hint, hint.
Yeah, I like that. I like the already thing. I think in the book, it's actually going to be Lady Stoneheart, who's going to kill Walder Frey. I don't think it's going to be Arya.
Are Martin so long to move characters around? So I don't know. Gun to my head, I'm going to say Arya does it because it's simply because it's more rewarding.
And is it one of those things that it's too big for it not to be true?
So, let's talk Jon stuff. Let's talk Tower of Joy first. Any problems with that scene?
Not at all, no. I mean, outside of the fact that I couldn't hear the name, and the threat, you're never going to know the name, but we're going to know the name. We're going to know the name this year. The first thing that came to my mind today, when I was thinking about when we before the podcast and we set up here tonight, I said to myself, one of the things that I think was really is, and this is why it's so important that Bran sees this, that Bran does see that Jon is the son of Lyanna, and once he figured out that it's Rhaegar, the father, it's saying Mira Reed says to Bran, says, are you sure you want to do this? You sure you want to see this? And then Bran says, I have to see this.
Right.
I'm the three-eyed raven. Not splitting at him here. It's an important bird scene. It's an important scene for Bran to see. He has to see this bird scene. And he has to be ready for it. He has to be ready to what it tells. He has to know and understand of
the ramifications.
You know, with Bran, when he goes to the dream mirror, Reed telling him, "Are you sure you're ready to see this?" And Bran says, "Yes, I am ready. I have to be ready. I'm a three-eyed raven now." It just tells me that it's very important for Bran to see this, that this birth has a huge ramification on future events. And it's like telling Bran that Jon's key to this battle coming up.
I get that, but Bran didn't know that Lyanna was giving birth, right? Because in the first vision, he saw up until Ned heard Lyanna call for him from the tower, right?
Right. That's a good question. How would he know it's important?
I mean, he knew something was going on.
Right. He wanted to know it was in that tower and plot armor. D&D plot armor.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bit he could put together. Knowing his father, he didn't know about that battle. Knowing Lyanna was there, why is the Kingsguard protecting Lyanna? Kind of piece it together in his own head, or at least have some sort of idea. Yeah, I can buy that.
I just think it's important that they put that line in there for a reason. I didn't think the funny now, Benjamin just rides off with a horse. It's just great. Just stay here. You'll be fine. Go across the wall. Mira will be able to, you know, carry you through feet of snow on a sled. It's okay.
How'd she get him out of there and hold the door?
By the sled, but then like they go on horseback though. Where do they put the sled? Oh, would they put it around the horse's ass? Yeah. Is he tied around the horse's tail? Yeah. She's giving haircuts and making sleds. Mm-hmm. Anyways, you know, back to the Tower of Joy scene in itself. It's, you know, I'm not sure how much it's word for word. It's going to happen from the books. You know, the dialogue that is said between Lyanna and Art. And curious, we're going to see this actress again for, you know, Lyanna next season somehow. Another flashback, perhaps.
Yeah, but, I think so.
Mm-hmm. I would, if there's been a flashback. Yeah, it's got to be the wedding, or a lot of people want to see the tournament at Harrenhal, but that's going to be really tough to pull off.
Yeah, that'd be too much of a budget for that. And
The only thing you might see maybe at tournament at Harrenhal is just maybe Lyanna and Rhaegar like kissing or something like that, and then you see a wedding.
Yeah.
The Tower of Joy scene was great. You know, finally, you know, confirmation. I know there's still people out there that are still like, "Oh, it's just a show," and the show's version.
Show, but it's based
just
on
the show's version. So. Yeah, it's based. Yeah, it's just.
That's a major plot point.
Major plot point. That's not gonna be different. I'm sorry. I hate to burst people's bubbles. It's not gonna be different. Not gonna be different. And then the very next scene, we cut in baby eye to Jon Snow's eyes, and they go on and. Lyanna Mormont makes that huge speech, much better speech than any Daenerys Targaryen speech ever.
Yeah.
Of all the Daenerys speeches, of all the other speeches in the show, Lyanna Mormont just nails it. Lord Manderly, who, big enough guy, but he's probably 100 pounds less than what the real Manderly would want. There's no way the real...
That walrus mustache, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, it was good casting, basically. For his sake, he's not 100 pounds heavier than how the show takes Manderly to be.
How about the Melisandre scene?
I liked it. You know, I knew right away, like, we're going to see John Davos and her again somehow. We're definitely going to see John Davos. You know, it's just, you know, the fact that she's going down south and the Brotherhood Without Banners is coming up north. I can't wait. I just can't wait.
And they're going to be like, "Jon Snow's the king of the North? What?"
Ned Stark's bastards?
He's like, well, you guys fucked everything up, so I had to fix it.
You guys do know that there's an army of wits and White Walkers attacking. Yeah. No, we don't want to. Yeah, they're going to kill us all, so we better, you know.
I'm going to give the Winds of Winter. Ah, dude, I can't decide. I'm gonna give it a 9.75.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a 9.75. I was going to go 9.5 again, but I want to... I'm going to go 9.75 because of the Tower of Joy, because of John, King in the North, that opening Cersei scene.
Dany's stuff was actually pretty good with the music.
Yep.
I love Jamie's reaction when he sees Cersei. He just knows, like, what the hell did you do? Let's see. I'm going to see how I can grade this out. I'm going to go with the 9.75 as well.
Nice, John. Nice.
I'm not sure if any episodes actually, you know what? For me being such a Jon Snow fan, nothing right now can surpass. Like, if I didn't watch season 7 or season 8, I could actually be happy right now because RLJ got confirmed and then he's the King of the North.
Yeah.
I will take that. In this story where everyone dies, I will take that. If that's what I have to take, I will take that. Obviously, if he, you know, he's going to do a lot more stuff, but there's no guarantees what he does. You know, is he going to live? Is he going to die? You know, in the end. So right now he's living. He's the king of the North. RLJ confirmed. It's very tough to beat that at this point in time.
Agreed.
Take without my rose colored glasses on, it's very hard to beat that. With the glasses on, you know, he's gonna kill everyone. He's gonna kill the king, nice king. He's gonna be king of the, you know, the realm. Blah 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 blah. The music again in this episode is fantastic. Oh, the opening by the Seven. You had the Cersei music, Dame Which Comes Queen, Dany's music, the Tower of Joy music, Winter's Come, which is John, the King of the North music. It's unbelievable.
Tower of Joy music.
Yes, it's amazing. I mean, I wish I could get it perfect
episode as we've gotten. And
yeah, definitely as close.
I don't see how they can get much better than this episode.
I guess maybe if there's another episode that's just as good, it can be perfect. I guess we have to put like a 9.85 or something. I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we could do 9.9. I guess, you know, you want to do that? We could do that.
I only have this ranked a half a point higher than season 5.
Well, season 5 had those 3 episodes at the end. Plus, you had a couple 6.75, my friend.
Yeah, I did. I just didn't like The Broken Man that much. And Blow My Blood got some lower points. You probably have a higher score than I do, because you, The Broken Man, you gave a nice...
Yeah. I mean, I only had one below a 7, so...
Yeah, 78.25, that's my score.
My average is 8.025.
Mine is 7.825.
Well, because it's those two 6.75s, bro.
Yeah, it's me. Those 6.75s really lower it down.
All right, guys, thanks for listening. As always, we appreciate it. We're almost there. One more episode, and we're all done with our rewatch. And then it is, and then we'll have our season 7 preview, and it's upon us. It's here, just about. So we'll speak with you guys soon. Thank you, and have a good night. Bum 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 b